order and start out with the roll call.
Cornish.
Here.
Woodard. Mallory. Gauthier. Grunhagen.
Oh, Gauthier's here.
Hilty. Johnson. Kelly.
Here.
Kiefer. Kriesel.
Here.
Leidiger.
Here.
Mariani. McDonald. Moran. Nornis.
Here.
Slocum.
Present.
Smith.
14. Okay, quorum's present and accept a motion to approve the minutes of April 14th. Okay, Representative Slocum moves the minutes of April 14th. Any additions, corrections? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion passed. Opposed? All right. I think we're going to start out with Representative Keel's bill, and if you want to approach with your... What? 922. If you want to approach and where's it going? Representative Kelly, would you like to move Representative Keel's bill?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 922 and refer to the General Register.
Okay. Representative Kelly moves Representative Keel's bill. It's in front of us. This is, I think, a rather non-controversial bill, and we're plugged for time today, so why don't you give us a brief overview and tell us what it's about.
I will do that. I also need to pass Amendment 2. Do you have that in your file?
Okay.
It is to make it a little more
A2
friendly.
Amendment?
A2 amendment, yes.
Okay. Representative Kelly, you want to move that amendment?
I would A2? Like to move that amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kelly moves the A2 amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, Representative Keel.
Thank you, Chair Cornish and members. This is a really simple bill. It allows antique vehicles that are being that have been restored, ambulances, fire trucks. There's a couple here that they don't have the correct lights on them to be run on the roads. And, you know, we see them in parades, at antique shows and those types of things. And they're illegal out and about without, and so what I'm looking for is permission for them to, with the law enforcement, to have them be able to have the lights run during parades and at various shows. My amendment reminds us all that we can't use those lights on major highways and streets, so that also doesn't allow people to run around. But it will, it states that it will, lights will be able to be used in parades and other special events. So that's basically it. I don't know, do you have anything to add, Mr. Straczynski?
Mr. Straczynski, would you like to?
Mr. Chairman, very briefly, I'm Bill Straczynski. Today here I represent the Minnesota Street Rod Association and its 20,000 members, as well as the fire departments, chiefs, marshals, and all those folks. Very simply, Mr. Chairman, these right now it's illegal to have these vehicles on the highway because the lights are not legal under the current law. Because they're blue lights or different lights, different configurations, the law has changed. So as we store them, we just want permission to be able to drive them on the road and display the lights only in the exhibition or parade. That simple. Makes us legal.
Okay, thank you. Members, any questions on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Kelly would like to renew his motion 922 to be recommended to pass and go to the General Register. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keel. Sorry to hurry you through there, but you got a meeting to go to.
That's
too.
That's okay. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
And now, yeah. Now, House File 1428, Representative Westrom. And as members remember, our last meeting, we had testimony for the public was closed, and when we get up here and get ready, Representative Westrom will be ready to answer any questions you might have. Members, questions on Emily's Law. Representative Johnson. Did you have it? Which one? What?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrom. I had a question looking at the bill. What happens... A 13-year-old is certified, and he screws up and has to have his certified as an adult at that point. Where is he sent as far as incarceration? And Red Wing can't take him, as I understand it. Does he go to St. Cloud then?
Representative Johnson, what would happen to a 13-year-old who's certified EJJ? They can't be certified as an adult under this bill. They would, if they screwed up a second time, as you say, they would serve their time in a county jail or a Red Wing facility, a juvenile facility, would be the other option that would probably be the outcome. The language in the bill would restrict them from being committed to the state penitentiaries or state facilities, and that's the intent.
Representative Johnson?
Nothing else right now.
And Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrum, what do you mean when you say if they screw up a second time? What do that mean?
Representative Moran, under the EJJ system, it's a mid-level system that says to the youth, you're going to be handled in the juvenile process. The courts are now going to watch over you until 21 instead of 19. But if you don't comply with your sentence as a juvenile, or if you go out and commit another act between or after your first sentencing, then the adult sentence that was given to you at the same time under EJJ would be invoked. Under this bill, we're modifying that adult sentence for 13-year-olds that are certified EJJ in response to the concern that you and others had, that are concerned that a 13-year-old at age 14, if they mess up a second time or don't comply, would get put into a state penitentiary facility. The idea of the compromise language here is to say they would remain locally in the county jail or in a juvenile facility, and so that's what I mean is this: if you invoke your sentence under EJJ, which is commit another crime or don't follow through on the punishment you're supposed to be following through on.
Thank you. Okay.
Representative Moran.
Thank you. I need you to help walk me through this process, because your bill says if a 13-year-old is commits a crime, a heinous crime, that they will serve their sentence until they're 21 instead of 19, right? Is that right?
They'll be under supervision until 21 instead of 19.
So they may serve 3 years or 2 years, whatever, but they will be on probation until they're 21?
Representative Westman?
Correct, Representative Moran. The sentence they would serve would be up to the judge and the prosecuting attorney, ultimately. What I've been told by some in the field is if they have a 3-year sentence, they might only serve 6 months with the rest stayed or something like that. But that would be, they would have to serve the sentence that they're given and be on probation until 21.
Representative Moran?
Okay, thank you. So if they serve 2 years, then maybe 15, and they may violate their probation.
Hold on. If I can, Representative Moran.
Okay.
Representative Westman.
They aren't going to serve for their first, they aren't going to serve jail time for their first violation. And so what you just said there, I think, wasn't correct, because under EJJ,
they aren't certified as an adult, and under this bill, they can't, at age 13, get certified as an adult. So it would be a juvenile sentence that they're first going to be sentenced with.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean they were going to serve their time as an adult. But whatever time they serve, wherever they are, if they serve 2 years of that, they're going to be on probation until they're 21. Mm-hmm. It could be longer, I guess, shorter, but at least until 21. And if they commit a crime, which could be anything, they will go back into an adult prison system. Is that what happens?
Representative Westman?
Two tracks, Representative Moran. The EJJ of their first crime, whatever the adult sentence was that was suspended or held over their head, could be invoked. That's the way the current process is. We're extending EJJ, and that's at 14 to 18 right now. At age 14, you can be certified EJJ or certified as an adult. We're dropping the age of just EJJ certification to 13, with the caveat that if you were certified EJJ, your prison sentence as an adult that's hung over your head can't be in the state facilities. It would have to be in the county jail or a juvenile treatment center like Red Wing or some of the other boys' homes or girls' homes that we know about. The second crime that you do, let's just presume that somebody at age 13 doesn't do another crime until they're 14 or older. The current law would take place, and that is they could be charged as a juvenile under the juvenile system. They could be charged under EJJ again, which under the current system, or they could be certified as an they could be certified EJJ, or they could be certified as an adult because they're now 14 on their second crime only. It wouldn't apply to their first crime. Does that help?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Moran.
So I just want to read something that I got I have here from Youth and Law that says Minnesota law makes many distinctions between the rights and responsibilities of adults and young persons. Part of, I guess maybe a study or research was done with in December 2010, House Research overview of youth law that states that legal distinctions are drawn at the age of majority, which is statutorily defined as 18. Persons under the age of 18 are minors. They are deemed less able than adults to take responsibilities for themselves or to carry out obligations to others. They are considered more in need of protection, both from their own inexperienced judgment and from the actions of others. So as you can see, I am a strong advocate to believe that a 13 or 14-year-old, 15-year-old, 16-year-old are a minor. They are a child. And that we make clear distinctions between a minor and adult for reasons. And one, because they, you know, developmentally, they are a minor. And developmentally, the brain is not developed so that they can think and function as an adult. And so for me, whether we want to lower the age on a second charge of a 13-year-old, a 14-year-old, a 15-year-old, and charge them as an adult seem to not to be going in the right directions. I think at our last hearing, you asked the question, why not? Why not prosecute a 13-year-old as an adult? Why not prosecute a 14-year-old as an adult? And so I wanted to address that why not. And why not is because they are not an adult. They cannot think and function as an adult. And I think as a state, we need to find ourselves in a place where we are providing intervention and prevention and the support. And not to say that they do not need to have consequences for their actions. But we as a state, as the adults, as parental figures, I guess, that we have to find how can we do better to provide prevention for our young people who are not yet developmentally ready in society or in a system to be deemed and seen as an adult. And so, and again, why do you see a need to prosecute a 13-year-old child as an adult.
Representative Westbrook.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moran, a lot in that statement and questions. First of all, to start with your question, why do we have this bill?
No, not why do we have the bill.
It fits into why do we see the need. Because the current system of justice gives an injustice to the family that has their daughter murdered. You've got two people here. You're very concerned about the person that murdered a 2-year-old. If the 17-year-old, 14-year-old murdered your daughter or son or mine, I would think, you might think they should have some punishment. That's why we're here. To go back to what you were saying, I don't want the committee to be confused by your discussion, because we're not talking about an adult sentence here. You inferred that. I want to make it clear to the committee. This is not lowering the age of adult certification. Period. That was in the first bill. We've left that bill. We've introduced a new bill trying to listen to your concerns, other persons that are here that have come showed up. And it is simply taking the EJJ system, modifying it so somebody 13 doesn't end up in the state pen, and lowering that mid-level punishment option, certification for the prosecuting attorneys, to have that option if a 13-year-old murders somebody or violently assaults them or criminally sexually assaults them. That's the crimes we're talking about here. We're not talking about hubcap stealing. We're not talking about spray painting a building. We're not talking about stealing some candy bars. We're talking about very serious crimes here. And if it was my daughter or your daughter, I think you'd be pretty outraged at the system we currently have. And that's what we're trying to do, is finding that balance. But the balance of saying a murderer at 19 days before 14 walks free, 2 years sooner without oversight, less options for the prosecuting attorneys to have a stronger sentence hanging over their head to induce reform and compliance. If they don't screw up again, Representative Moran, they're treated as a juvenile and they don't have a tougher sentence. That's a pretty strong compromise, a pretty good compromise for your concerns. But somebody that keeps screwing up, Michael Swanson just got sentenced, went down to Iowa and murdered two store clerks just because he thought it was fun. This isn't fun and games. And youth at 13, 14, 15, no right and wrong. My 5-year-old, my 2-year-old, Representative Moran, knows right and wrong. And he knows when he's got a candy bar that he's dug out of the closet or out of the cupboard, why is he standing in a corner in the dining room hoping I don't find him? It's because he knows right and wrong, Representative Moran. This is not adult certification, though, so don't confuse it. I would want to stress that to the committee.
Representative Moran?
Representative Westbrook, your 2-year-old and your 5-year-old is just that, a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. That's just all they are. And whether he's sneaking, it's alert behavior, you know, but he is what he is, and she is what she is. And I think your kids, you have some beautiful young kids. But I would like to say that if one of my children were murdered or a crime committed against them, I would like to see that person punished. But if they were a youth themselves, I would realize, too, that they are just a youth. And I would not want them to be seen as an adult or try as an adult or put periods. You know, one of the things from the county's attorney office, they pointed out that the juvenile justice system was created to provide juvenile offenders consequences that will protect public safety, right? Because we all want to be provided safety. It also changes behavior by using means that are fair and just, that recognizes the unique characteristics and needs of children, that gives children access to opportunity for personal and social growth. So part of this, which is also included in your bills, to say that a crime that they commit as a child, those records will be open to them forever and forever. When do we ever give our young people who brain is still developing, where they have had a chance and an opportunity to first serve their time, given the support they need while they're incarcerated, to also have an opportunity for life after prison? And what your bill is saying, you never get a chance to have a job, you never get a chance to have, because that is what happens when our young people or old people have a felony. They are never, ever forgiven for the crime they committed. And people do change. You know, hopefully your 2-year-old and your 5-year-old will grow and learn that, you know, to steal a candy bar is inappropriate and wrong, and they will learn from that. And that happens when we are given that chance to do that in an appropriate manner. But to never, ever allow a person a second chance to be thriving, upstanding citizens is inappropriate and it's wrong. Not to say that they must be punished for their crime, but not as an adult. They're not an adult. And people need to be given a chance to become upstanding citizens to go on and thrive. And that is a part of public safety. If we don't do that little bit to keep our community safe, then we continue to create an environment where people have no options.
Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrom, I've taught 12 through 14-year-olds for coming close to 25 years. That's a long time with 12 to 14-year-olds. They are a unique group. We argue vehemently about whether developmentally they're ready for beginning algebra. Their brains, their bodies are developing at an astronomical rate. They're clumsy. They developmentally, their heads are not working at full tilt. And they don't mature. They don't get to maturity till many years later. And it's just kind of what you know, that as you work with these kids, that you got to take them from where they are. And I've worked in the mean streets. I've worked in the highest poverty level in Minneapolis schools, a couple of them, actually. And I've worked with gangbang kids who are in families that are gang-affiliated. I've worked with warring gang factions. The kid I was closest to was murdered, 4 bullets to the head. So I've had some experience with violence. I just want to know, do you have any data? Do you have any studies, legitimate studies, that cite that this is where we should be going with juvenile justice? That lowering the age works? That this is a best practice? That this dovetails with some of the national trends in juvenile justice?
Representative Westman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Slocum, several other states allow prosecutors more discretion. Some don't have a minimum age of adult certification. Some are at 10, some are 12, some are 13, some are 14, some are 15. So it's across the board. I don't want to confuse the committee. We're not talking about adult certification here. The system also is just one more tool in the toolbox for prosecutors. They're going to evaluate the case, the evidence, what happened, and only if they petition for certification and it's granted would this be implemented. Arguably on few, but hopefully on the right cases that could use a little more oversight and a little more of a second chance. That's what this bill is about. It's not adult certification. It's still keeping them in the juvenile justice system, watching them 2 more years, and saying you've got a second chance to show to us that you weren't thinking right. but don't do it again. That's what this is about.
Reverend Dennis Wilkins.
Chair. But Representative Westrom, surely they have, these other states have some data, some studies that show, is this effective? How many cases do they have? Are we it seems we're making a law for one situation. My heart breaks for Mrs. Johnson. But I think it's wrong to make a law for one case. And I think it would be a very isolated situation. But what of the other states? What's their track record? How's it worked for them to lower the age?
Representative Westman.
And I don't think that muddies the waters.
Mr. Chair, Representative Slocum, I don't have that data in front of me.
I have some data.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westman, I appreciate the idea of not sending these 13-year-olds to prison, but as far as sending to county jails, they're not really set up for that. I know you need to have some very specific separation visually in terms of all the programming, dining, recreation, medical services. The county jails, or Red Wing as far as that goes, aren't set up for that kind of separation of services and supervision that would be needed if in case that happens. So, you know, I think that's a failure in this bill right there. Secondly, you know, as to the intent of the bill, I would hope that the purpose of this bill would be to deter future tragedies like this from happening in the future. You know, I hope that's the point of the bill. Because if it's just retribution, you know, a 13-year-old, as we've heard, their brain development isn't where others, where adults are, that can think ahead. They're not going to be thinking about this particular state statute and decide not to do something based on that. It just doesn't make any sense. So I guess one of the main problems I have with this legislation is that it doesn't serve as a deterrence for future tragedies of this kind in any fashion. It's not oriented toward that in any kind of best practices, best correctional practices sort of way. I mean, if we're really interested in doing that, we at this session, we're cutting youth intervention services, we're cutting youth employment opportunities. If we're truly interested in our kids and preventing all kinds of problems, that's where we should be investing money on the front end, not coming up with bills like this where we throw kids in jail.
Representative Westerman, you mind if I just move to the next question? These are more statements in there. Of course, questions. Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Westrom, what happens with this juvenile record? A heinous crime is committed at 13. They're successfully rehabilitated, and yet your bill says, if I read this right, that the record's not expunged. Is that correct?
Till 28. Mr. Chair, Representative Gauthier, it would hold them till they can't expunge them till 28.
28.
Ten years after they become an adult.
Okay. So I'm just trying to wrap my head around that because those are critical years for seeking careers and whatnot. And why would we hold that? Actually, it's an additional punishment because of employment opportunities during crucial years for somebody who's been rehabilitated. I'm not sure why you have that in your bill. I guess that's my question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gauthier, because some of the injustice that the family has learned through this process of having their daughter murdered and feeling a terrible injustice is that the murderer in this case, his record could be expunged as early as 21. And they would like to know if they have another, they or some friends might be going to a daycare, might be going to some other place where this person now works maybe full-time, people ought to at least have, for the public safety, ought to have the ability to know about that potentially. And if you expunge your record earlier than that, maybe to use some of the arguments we've been hearing that their brain doesn't develop till they're 18 or older. And so let me try to use that argument to win Representative Johnson and yourself and Representative Slocum over. Okay, let's presume they don't have capacity till they're 18. Why, under the current system, then, how would we, one, know they're rehabilitated, and two, what would be wrong with watching them for two more years than we currently do under the current system? Because now, at the end of their 18th year, the system, the courts quit overlooking them, and now, using your argument, that's the first year that they know what they're doing. So this bill, again, is reasonable in looking over these persons that we're hoping have rehabilitated and changed. We're watching them until 21 instead of till the end of their 18th birthday.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Grothy.
Representative Westrom, well, first of all, I don't believe it takes till 21 for your brain to develop, so let's be clear about that.
Okay.
I guess what I'm hearing, we don't, you know, going back to the incident that precipitated this, we don't really know that young man's rehabilitated or not. And in some ways, I wish I did know, because I think it would make the arguments on both sides easier to tolerate and to argue. But I'm going to assume, you know, if he's free today, that that's probably true, that he is rehabilitated. You know, I've spent my career in working with people in, and a lot of them felons, in trying to rehabilitate them. And the problem I have with this bill is that you have someone who is young, who has gone through EJJ, has rehabilitated, and yet we're going to keep his record open for 10 more years till he's 28. And that, to me, is injustice. And I would really argue that with you. I mean, if it was my child, every part of my being would cry out for a response different than what they got. Every part of my being. And I would demand punishment. I understand that. But that's not justice. That's dealing, at some point, there needs to be mercy. And this bill doesn't do it. It really puts somebody on, Representative Westrom, keeping their record open until 28, that's really destroying somebody's life that could have been rehabilitated. And I guess we need to, you know, I'm not Solomon, but we sure need the wisdom of Solomon today. Because I am going to err on the side of caution and say that we can't take this step to keep records open until they're 28.
Okay, Representative Mariani, if you would settle for some wisdom from Cornish, we keep alcohol violations on for life right now. I know a guy that urinated in the public street because it was an alcohol violation. It's still on his record. He's trying to remove it. And open bottles, I think we can fit a few murderers in there.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think we're dealing with adults and not children, and... And your wisdom and my wisdom would both be very partisan.
Okay, Representative, are we done? Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair and Representative Weston, just a quick question. excuse me, I had asked this question earlier, last time Bill was here. I haven't seen any changes in the language before us, but I listened closely to what you said earlier, where you said, you know, your intent is to keep juveniles in the juvenile justice system, and your intent is that no child will be sent to an adult prison, which I concur. Particularly, I concur given, you know, some of the realities of prison life that we don't often talk about here, like prison rape, which is a very real reality in prison. My question really is the same question as last time, which is, Where in the bill is your language that says that once a child has been remanded to the EJJ system, they shall never be sent to an adult prison as a child?
Mm-hmm. Representative Westman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, I don't remember the exact line and page, but maybe House Research Staff can help me guide you there, but there's a phrase that says they shall not be committed to the Department of Corrections, and that's what restricts them from going to that facility.
Ms. Pierce, could you help us out with that?
Sure, Mr. Chair and members. If you look at, line 4.3, this section is creating a separate disposition for children age 13, and it states that in imposing an adult criminal sentence, the court may not order that a child be committed to the custody of the Commissioner of Corrections in a state correctional facility for adults.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative Marion.
This is not my area of expertise. I focus mostly on education issues, but it's my understanding that there are instances when a child is remanded to EJJ, where they can, in fact, subsequently be sent to an adult prison. And so I guess I just want clarity about whether that's the case or not. And more importantly, whether any of the language in the bill here would prevent that from ever happening.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Westman.
Representative Mariani, what you, I think, are under this bill, that wouldn't. If the child is 13 when they commit the crime, under the current EJJ system, and we're not taking that cross on, if you will, under the current EJJ system, yeah, they could be remanded to adult prison. But that's the current system. That is nothing. We're not adopting that provision of the current system for 13-year-olds under this bill, nor are we taking on any other issues you might have with EJJ, so I would just ask that you don't mix that with this. But this system for 13-year-olds, they can't commit them to this adult prison from under the Department of Corrections.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, you're the one who testified in public here that it is the intent of this bill that no child will be sent to an adult prison. And perhaps the question goes to counsel here relative to whether there's language in this bill that will specifically, explicitly prevent that from happening, regardless of what the EJJ rules and regulations currently are or may eventually morph into. And so, Mr. Chair, I would ask counsel if they can point me to language that would reassure this legislator that's in the bill.
Ms. Pierce?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mariani, I would go back to line 4.3. This is setting up a separate disposition for 13-year-olds who are certified as EJJ, and so it would only apply to the 13-year-olds. It would not change the current system for 14 to 17-year-olds. Those minors age 14 to 17 could still be sent to an adult prison. But the intent on line 4.3 to 4.5 is that this subgroup of 13-year-olds, in imposing that adult sentence, they could be sent to an adult jail or to Department of Corrections Red Wing, which is a juvenile facility, but they it would not allow the court to impose a sentence that includes custody at a state correctional facility for adults like St. Cloud.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Marty,
and to counsel, we need to be very careful with words. So it seems to me, as I heard your description, that it goes to the issue of the disposition of the court at the time. And I guess what I'm getting at, in terms of my need to be reassured that no child will be sent to an adult prison, that it, my understanding is that in the EJJ system, subsequent to a court disposition, there are processes by which an adult, or rather a child who's been remanded there, could very well be sent to an adult prison. And I guess my question again, and I'm not going to intent with counsel here,
My question just is whether there is strong technical language that would prohibit that in this bill from ever happening.
Ms. Pierce?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe that's what 4.3 to 4.5 does. I don't know if any of the stakeholders would argue that it doesn't, but I don't believe that the adult court could change the sentence. I believe I should look at the language, but I believe they have to impose the sentence that was given.
Okay. Any more questions? Representative Mullery, or let's see, we've got Moran and then Mullery. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrum, what I really find interesting in the language of the bill is that we use the word child and children. And we continue to use those words because that's what they are. They are children. And I think we can all around this table can say if someone commit a crime that there's consequences for that, that they should be punished for those actions. But I'm really struggling to see why we need to charge a child as an adult. I'm struggling with why we need to charge a child as an adult. Can you help me with that, Representative Westrum?
Representative, you've stated it about five times.
One
more time, just shorter.
So don't answer that. I'm going to read this really quick, and we might have this article. I know Representative Slocum asked about any research or data that we have from other states about what's going on. This is an article from the New York Times. It said, a generation after record level of youth crime spurred a nationwide movement to prosecute more teenagers as adults. A consensus is emerging that young delinquents have been mishandled by the adult court system. Last year, Connecticut stopped treating all 16-year-old defendants as adults. The next year, we'll do the same for 17-year-olds. Illinois recently transferred certain low-level offenders younger than 18 into its juvenile system. And in January, lawmakers in Massachusetts introduced a bill to raise the age of adulthood and manners of crime, and their counterparts in Wisconsin and North Carolina intended to do the same. By the year end, New York might be the only state where adulthood in criminal matters begin on the 16th birthday. The changes follow studies that concluded that older adolescents differ significantly from adults in their capacity to make sound decisions and benefited more from systems focused on treatment rather than on incarceration. So my question to Stan, why are we prosecuting our babies as adults? And you don't have to answer because you have already.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moran, first of all, there is individual responsibility. Secondly, because they've murdered somebody. And I don't want murderers just letting go.
Neither do I.
That seems to be what you're advocating for. That's why you would hold them, incarcerate them, watch over them. We're just giving the prosecutors a tool. They don't even have to use it if they don't think it fits the crime.
Representative Mullery and then Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, Representative Westrum, I think you made a couple of incorrect statements, and maybe you didn't intend them. You said you can't serve time in jail for EJJ. You can serve...
No, I didn't. Well,
actually,
I didn't intend to, Mr. Chair.
Okay, because you can spend time in jail for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, as we heard in testimony, that the actual fact is the child involved in this incident could have spent longer in juvenile lockup than he could have in prison if he was treated as an adult. So that still is a fact. And also, he under EJJ they can be put in prison at Red Wing. So I want to clear that up. Another thing is, you said it can only be for a serious crime. I think that. That's very debatable. You include malicious punishment, And that doesn't even necessarily, in fact, it doesn't require any physical harm at all. Some people would say, you know, that it's cruel to make some child sit in a corner for 24 hours. To maybe some of us, like me, if I was forced to sit and watch Rush Limbaugh for 24 hours, it may be cruel punishment. But it's not necessarily got anything to do with physical harm. So you're including a lot. Another thing that's needs to be pointed out is you were saying that it's another crime, but in reality, it can also be a probation violation. So if a kid is out after curfew, they can suddenly have the adult sentence imposed. If they're commit a petty misdemeanor, they can have the adult sentence imposed. If they have a beer, they can have the adult sentence imposed. So there's a lot of really tiny things when you're not just including another crime, but you're including any type of probation violation. And that, if you ask a probation officer, that happens an awful lot. I'm not going to go over the fact that I've been on national panels and had a lot of involved with a lot of national groups that all national research is contrary to your bill in saying that, and that's why we're going to study over the interim what to do with juveniles, and I think it doesn't need repeating that all groups that were involved with youth and crime oppose this bill. So it seems to be totally going against all the tide of research and reasoning to do this. But I did want to point out some things that were maybe unintentionally stated there, and wanted to point out how little things can actually trigger that.
Okay, Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Western, if the child was 14 and would have committed this act, we'd be talking a whole different scenario in terms of the consequences. Is that correct?
That's correct, Representative Grunhagen. 19 days later, he would have been 14. He'd have been under the current EJJ that Representative Mullery just reviewed.
Which is?
Or could have been petition for adult certification. Both of those options would have been at the county attorney's discretion.
Representative Grunhagen?
Mr. Chair, so what we're doing with this bill is simply lowering those options down to age 13, correct?
Just one of those options, with the modification that state corrections, adult facilities cannot be part of the judicial sentence.
Representative Grunhagen?
Just a final comment. I support this bill for several reasons, but one of the things I would say is that there has to be consequence for this type of behavior. You know, we've had three meetings with testimony here, and the first meeting, if I recall properly, even the principal at the school where this young boy was attending was not aware of the circumstances that had happened in terms of the murder of this daughter, okay, if I remember the video properly. And also in terms of a daycare situation where he might be present, the parents wouldn't even be notified in terms of what his previous actions were. Secondly, I understand that we're imposing a certain amount of consequences, and I agree with consequences. You know, I'm a lay person. I understand brain development. I've read numerous articles about it. I was a school board member for a long time, got a lot of input on that. But the one differing factor is, from my position versus some of that information, I do believe you're born with a conscience, okay? Modern psychological theory denies that reality. I believe it, and there's credible experts who believe people are born with that conscience. So even though they don't fully understand their actions, until a certain age, they do have a conscience that tells them that's wrong. And therefore, appropriate consequences are appropriate. Secondly, when I look at the perpetrator versus the victim, The victim carries lifelong consequences. They're gone forever. And the victim's family carries the consequence for the rest of their life of the loss of their daughter. And all the dreams and hopes and goals that they had for that young little girl. So I believe I appreciate you bringing the bill forward. I think it's a reasonable bill, and it applies consequences in a way that still helps the young first perpetrator try to straighten his life out in the future.
Representative Mullen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a point to Representative Grunhagen's. First of all, if you look in the 260B-163, I believe it is, or is it, I'm on the wrong, 260B-171, you said the principal of school didn't, there's a lot of things that happened in this actual case that people are saying that things couldn't be done. I think I was surprised at the way the youth was treated, and but that isn't because they couldn't have done it. It could have been done. And in fact, that statute, it's been pointed out to me, actually requires that the principal, so the fact he wasn't notified was a violation of the statute. So there's a lot of, when you look at what happened in the individual case, that isn't because a lot of things couldn't have been done to that youth.
Okay, seeing no more questions. Before I turn over to Representative Nornes, Ms. Johnson, would you like to say any brief comment or anything? And then maybe tell us when Emily's birthday is coming up, isn't it? Or?
Emily would have been 7 tomorrow. I just want to clarify one thing that we've heard before, and we should clarify it every time we testify. In our case, if he would have either been 14 or this law would have been effective for us, the prosecutor would have moved forward with it, and his punishment or his crime he could have been charged with would have been greater than the manslaughter he was essentially found guilty of or pled guilty to. That was the highest thing. The prosecutor's hands were tied as far as that. So when we hear the thing that he would have served less time being charged as an adult, that is false because the charge would have been higher, so the time served would have been higher. I just want to clarify that. And I thank you for your time today.
Yeah. Representative Westman, any closing comments before I have Representative Nornes move your bill?
Mr. Chair, I'll really be brief. Members, I think this is about a reasonable compromise to have youth have a second chance but have consequences to their actions. And we went over all the details. Again, this is not adult certification, lowering that. It is lowering the EJJ and modifying EJJ for 13-year-olds, not reforming the current system if people want, like or don't like that. This lowers it, gives the prosecutors one more tool in deciding how they're going to prosecute somebody that's committed a heinous crime of murder, criminal sexual assault, or assault with violent assault. So I would ask you for your support. The family has been working on this and trying to work with the groups. I think this is a reasonable bill and would urge your support.
And seeing no more questions, Representative Nornes, would you,
Mr. Chair, like to renew House File, my motion that House File 1428 pass and be referred to the Committee on Judiciary.
Okay, you folks have heard the motions. Any questions, comments? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, motion carries. Thank you, Representative Westbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Representative McFarland, I wanted to bring you up here so we can get the peace officers taken care of back on the street there. So.
Move
the Chair will move House File 1245 to be recommended to pass and move to the General Register. Representative McFarland, would you like to present your bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I'd like to introduce House File 1245. It was brought to me by Ramsey County Attorney John Choi. And what it does, it expands the list of offenses that can constitute gang activity to include unlawful possession of a firearm by a minor. With that, I'd like to introduce Attorney John Choi.
Thank you.
Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is John Choi, the Ramsey County Attorney, and here with me today are Sergeant Kevin Moore, Commander Paul Ivino, and Sergeant Tony Spencer from the St. Paul Gang Unit. And we stand here today in support of House File 1245. This bill I would characterize as a narrow expansion of the definition of gang activity as used in the Civil Gang Injunction Statute. To give you a little context, in 2007, the Minnesota legislature passed overwhelmingly the Civil Gang Injunction Statute, which essentially allows for a city attorney, county attorney, or the attorney general to commence a civil legal action against criminal gangs under the premise that criminal gang activity is a public nuisance. Now, in that statute that the legislature passed, there's a number of things that we have to prove that a criminal gang exists and that their activities are in fact a public nuisance. Before I was elected as county attorney, I was the St. Paul city attorney, and during my tenure in 2009, we commenced three legal actions utilizing the Civil Gang Injunction Statute in 2009, and we used them for the Cinco de Mayo and the Rondo Days Festival. And because of those actions, we had great results in terms of keeping those festivals safe, and then we used a temporary injunction. As a part of building those cases, one of the things that we found was that a lot of the people that we were targeting as part of the civil action were juveniles, and then as a part of that, in their records were possession of a firearm, but we were not able to use that as a part of the case. And so this is an attempt to, in case that law enforcement would want to utilize this again in Ramsey County or statewide, that we would have everything available to us in the toolbox to utilize that offense as a predicate offense, as one of the three things that we would have to, three activities that we would have to prove within a 12-month period. And I'd like to also thank Representative McFarland for bringing this bill forward, and thank you very much.
Hey, any questions so far? If not, Representative Farmer, did you want any of the officers to testify?
Did you want to speak?
I said, sure, go ahead.
My sergeant has nominated me.
Here you go.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Paul Iavino. I'm the commander of the St. Paul Police Gang Unit. And we just appreciate this opportunity to come before the committee this morning and to lend our support to the county attorney here, as well as representative, that we feel it's an important piece for us. And we've used this very judiciously in the past, the city and the county attorney, and certainly intend to do that in the future. And it's a very temporary injunction. The only thing we're asking for is just a simple amendment that the juvenile in the legal possession of the firearm be considered a predicate offense that we could consider as part of the three criteria that we look for in bringing this injunction forward. A lot of the gang members that we deal with, a great handful, are juveniles, and we just think it's an appropriate amendment to this bill. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Choi, or whatever you're, is that you, are you still what can be called that? If we vote for this, will you promise to go over to my city and give them a seminar on how this is working? Because I've heard very good results from St. Paul, and they still haven't used it in Minneapolis, although their answer last year at Juneteenth was to have one cop out of every four people there. Maybe this would be another way to do it.
Well, I thank you for the compliment that we're doing over on the, on this side of the river. I do really think that this had a great and positive impact, especially for the Cinco de Mayo Festival in 2009. It was probably one of the most peaceful events that we've ever had there. And then in 2010, again, nothing happened, nothing remotely close to having gang members present and doing the things that they did previously in 2008, where there was a really horrible shooting that happened after the Cinco de Mayo Festival.
Okay. Any closing statement, Representative McFarland?
No, I just hope you'll vote yes.
Okay. Seeing no more questions, the chair will move House File 1245 be recommended to pass. Move to the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? There you go. Thank you,
Officer. Thank you,
Chairman.
Thank you for joining. Okay, Representative Mullery, would you like to move your House file?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd move the House file. And does it, I can't remember if it goes anywhere or just to the General Register. I think General Register, although.
Will they open for possible inclusion?
Yes, yeah. And I think that hopefully it will be included in your, I believe you're going to carry the omnibus drug bill, and so
yeah,
hopefully it will be in there. Mr. Chairman, I'll be a little more brief this time. This bill, I think, is pretty much in has agreement from BCA, the Pharmacy Board. Mr. Dolish is in agreement. The only negative I've heard about this bill now is that there's one guy that's with a group to legalize marijuana said that he was against this because it'd be harder to get it legalized because they couldn't get the pharmacy board to do it without the legislative intent. As we all know, there have been, this got triggered by the death, I believe it's 2CE in Anoka County, but the fact is these new drugs and derivatives are happening all the time, every time we do something, and so that's why we want to have this bill so that the pharmacy board can keep up on it and add the new ones, and also that all the when they change just one molecule slightly, that can be added in. The other part was that the board would like to get rid of the authority to delete a drug such as marijuana. They think that should be up to the legislature. They would like to have the expedited rulemaking so that they can keep up with these drugs rather than having to wait 18 months or more to put them on the schedule as illegal as they find out about new things. Also, there's a part that just gets rid of the advisory council, which hasn't existed anyhow for many years. And it includes, this one includes the bath salts, which are just as dangerous as those other types of drugs. We've gone through this already before, and if Mr. Weiberg wants to testify or if there's any questions, I don't think it's necessary to go through it again as thorough as we did before.
That sounds good to me. If there's any questions. Okay. Representative Mulder, any closing statements before your bill is held over for possible inclusion?
Good bill, and I don't know of any opposition.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Mulder.
Thank you.
Hold it over for possible inclusion. Representative Barrett is next. Let's see. Here he is. Representative Barrett, Chair will move House File 1539 to be recommended pass and go to GovOps and move the bill. And do you have an amendment?
I do, Mr. Chair, and that's House File 1359.
Okay, House File 1359, excuse me. And you have a DE1 amendment?
I do have a DE1 amendment.
Okay, the chair will move the DE1 amendment to House File 1359. Any questions on the amendment? Get it in the proper order that the author wants it. If no questions, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, amendments added. Representative Barrett, two-year bill.
Sure, thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is the exact same bill as Representative Mullery just presented, and we had the conversation about. The only thing I would like to add to this bill that maybe I think would need clarification, not clarification, but some thoughts are, is that the reason for the amendment is so that we don't have a situation, as Representative Mullery mentioned, that started actually before the Blaine incident. Representative Kreisel had a bill regarding synthetic marijuana back in January and February. Then he presented, went through the House. I think Governor Dayton has signed that bill. So it's, oh, he hasn't yet? Okay. So it's waiting for Governor's signature. And then what happened after that is a bath salts situation came up in which many people around the country use synthetic product called bath salts to recreate themselves. And then after that, then the Blaine incident happened, I believe, in late February and March. So rather than go through these different drugs individually, we have decided to make changes to the statute so that we can all collectively look at these bills as what they are, which is a drug that people use to get high that they shouldn't have access to. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd stand for any questions.
Hey, members, any questions for Representative Grunhagen?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Barrett, so is your bill identical to Representative Mullery?
Mr. Chair, Representative Grunhagen, I believe it is identical to Representative Mullery's.
Representative Grunhagen?
That's
okay. Representative Mullery.
Question, why does that one have to go to... I wouldn't think that has to...
I'm sorry.
I don't... That shouldn't have to go to GovOps either.
They must have asked for it. I think they asked for it.
They must not realize that the rulemaking's already in the statute.
Okay, Representative Barrett, did you have anything to add, sir? Short comment? Okay.
I'm just here to answer any questions the committee might have.
Okay, any questions? Seeing none, House File, Chair, move House File 1359 be recommended to pass as amended and move to GovOps. Questions, comments? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you, Representative Barrett.
Thank you.
No, mine?
Yeah.
The Chair is going to go to the table now with three forfeiture bills related, and just so that we're clear here, these bills will be moved to Judiciary, and they're actually a work in progress, and we have conversation with a number of user groups here, and welcome for any input in and along the process here. So,
let's see. Who's going to what?
Just furnish one of them. Move your bill.
1535 first.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move my bill, House File 1535, to be recommended to pass and move to Judiciary. And I believe there is an amendment to this one.
A1 amendment, is that correct?
I believe so. Yes, that would be it. I would like to move the A1 amendment on to House File 1535, if I could.
Okay. Anyone have questions about the amendment? Discussion? If not, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted.
And, Mr. Chair, this is House File 1535, concerns forfeiture, and we have Mr. Kingery here present the bill in the sake for brevity.
Welcome, and identify yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is John Kingery, speaking on behalf of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association.
Over the interim, our association has worked with several other groups to, quite frankly, carry forward some of the changes that were made last year to a couple of other areas of the law. We've worked with the Minnesota Association of Defense Lawyers, the Criminal Institute for Justice, the Civil Liberties Union, and our organization. The association has endorsed the three proposals, now one proposal there in front of you. And in working with this on this issue, it was sort of summarized as a non-controversial bill in a controversial area. Essentially what you're doing is you're taking the changes that you made in controlled substances last year and are now applying them to DWI and to off-the-road violations. They the requirements are the ability to go to conciliation court, the ability to challenge that forfeiture within 60 days, the notice requirement, the simplification of the notice requirement is in here, the requirement of leaving a property receipt is in here, and again, it essentially is just taking the changes that were made last year and applying them. With this change, we believe that for law enforcement, for the cop on the street, we believe that for controlled substances, DWI, and for drive-by shooting, that one receipt form can be left with that individual, one forfeiture form. And so it'll make it easier for the law enforcement person on the street rather than having three or four of these forms. We're pretty sure that they can be consolidated into one. It adds a Somalia to the DWI, but again, in very general terms, it merely takes what you took last year and apply it to these two additional areas. And members, I would say also we have a representative here from the Minnesota Association of Defense Lawyers that would like to say a few words as well.
Welcome. Again, identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Catherine Turner. I'm a private criminal defense attorney. I'm here representing the Minnesota Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers today, and we're asking you to adopt this bill. We support it. It really is a housekeeping bill. It supports due process. It clarifies some pretty incomprehensible and confusing provisions that are currently in the statute, and it also makes forfeiture uniform. And as my colleague from the other side of the bench was, or other table was discussing, it does make it easier for law enforcement to be able to inform different people that they stop for these different crimes of the forfeiture procedure. There won't be different forfeiture windows for challenging for one crime versus another. It'll make it uniform, 60 days for everything. And it really reduces waste and inefficiency in the system. Currently, when a person who's, say, charged with DWI has their vehicle forfeited through this DWI provision, if they want to challenge the forfeiture case basically tracks with the criminal matter. It adds another file for the court, for the criminal judge to review, and it kind of, quite frankly, mucks up the procedure. This would, the conciliation court part of this would take the forfeiture challenge out of the criminal process and put it back in the civil realm, which is where forfeiture is and where it belongs. So, you know, we support the clarification points that are in this bill. We support the uniformity in this bill. We believe that it'll reduce waste and inefficiencies in the system. It will support law enforcement, and it will be it'll be beneficial for the public because there won't be questions about, well, is this forfeiture, do I have to challenge it within 30 days or 60 days, and how much is my car worth, and can I get it into conciliation court? It simplifies the provisions in the statute, which will benefit both the law enforcement and people who are charged with these crimes.
Question for Mr. Is it? Oops, I forgot the Kingery. Okay. Question is this amendment we have passed. It incorporates the language of House File 1514 and 1434. Is that?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, it incorporates that language with a couple of additional words that have been added since that bill was introduced. This language has been reviewed with all three bills, has been reviewed by, I think, at least a dozen county attorneys that practice in this area. And again, that's one of the reasons why our association has endorsed these three bills.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I've got an oral amendment here.
All right. State your oral amendment.
The oral amendment would have changed the date on line 228 of the amendment. Remove August 1st, 2011, and replace it with January 1st, 2012. I'd like to offer that as an oral amendment to 1535A1.
We'll just incorporate that into your amendment. Is that okay? Any questions? Representative Mulready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kingery, what's every change in this that treats anything in a even slightly different way from what we did last year with the ones we changed last year?
Mr. Kingery?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Mulery, the only two areas that I can think of right now are, one, the forfeiture form will have simpler, clearer language. So it does change that from last year. Remember last year, the forfeiture form was changed last year because of some suggestions. At the very end, we did try to come up with some easier to understand language, but we couldn't towards the end of last year. So that's what this does. Secondly, we do add the provision. Last year, a provision was added that said law enforcement cannot purchase forfeited items, or their employees of law enforcement agency, or their, I think, blood relatives. We also, this year, expand that to prosecutors as well. So those are essentially the two differences from what was done last year.
Well, Representative Mulery.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Kingery, you've been around here a long time, and I am very concerned. We spent many months last year really hashing this out and studying it extremely in detail, and then to find out over the weekend that there's a new huge bill on this, it very concerns me with the way this is done. I don't understand it yet, and I'm going to vote against it because it was such a controversial issue last year, and to rush something through without anybody having a chance to really find out what's going on, I think is totally improper. I know that MPPOA does not support it. They aren't opposed to it. Probably trying to figure out just where. And so that's my position, is I don't know if I'm going to end up totally opposed to it, but I don't think this is the way things should be done. And that's just a comment for anything for the future.
Any other members have questions? Not. Representative Cornish, want to renew your motion?
I renew my motion to House File 1535 as amended be recommended to pass and move to the judiciary.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Carried.
You just amended them into it. We amended these two into
it. Wasn't clear to me.
Yes.
Chair would move House File 1520, Representative Mulry's bill, for reconsideration so we can bring it up and move it on a different path. Any objection to that?
No. Mr. Chair, I agree with that. It's pointed out to John, by John, that both of them were asked for.
Okay, so the House File 1520 is in front of us, and Representative Mulry, would you like to move it?
Yes, I'd move my bill for recommended passage and re-referral to its GovOps, I believe.
Okay. Everybody's heard that. No questions. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Anything else on the agenda?
Okay, nothing else on the agenda. Any comments, questions? If none, meeting adjourned.